Yeah. Well, did you ever know, spend any time with Jimmy Martin?
Yeah.
He seems to have some problems speaking to a lot of folks.
Jimmy is a fine. You've got to know Jimmy. You got to know he's a bird brain. Jimmy Martin is. He's a good entertainer, a good singer, but he's let this damn music drive him crazy. You know, he lives it. See, I wouldn't and practices all the time. You know, yeah, I like Jim Martin. You know, but he's let this music drive him nuts. You know? See, I never see some people take and they let religion drive them nuts. Or they
oh yeah.
They let everything drive them nuts. The music was never that important to me. I'd done it to keep from having to work.
Mm-hmm.
A hard manual labor job because I had no education, you know, and it was better than getting out here and digging a damn ditch.
Uh-huh.
But if I'd known what I know now, I'd never pick, I'd seen a banjo picker or a mandolin player coming towards my house, I'd have shot him.
Oh, that's good. Can I use that statement?
Hell yeah.
That's great. You know, I guess it was Paul who says, boy, you're going to get an earful when you talk to Red, I tell you.
I
had no idea. I had no idea.
Some of these fellas, you know, what gets me is some of these musicians, you know, they'll come up and they'll say, look at my boat here. And it'll be about like a damn boat you could take and build, you know. And there's so, what I got in this music business, there's so many people that are so full of shit. They want to impress people they've got something. And all these fucking bluegrass pickers, you know, back in the 50s, you couldn't make a living at this damn shit, you know, until a festival started.
Mm-hmm.
You could not make a living. Bill Monroe couldn't keep a damn band. He couldn't pay him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the Flat and Scrubs, they could keep a band because Marty White was sponsored, you know.
Yeah.
And the rest of them was playing, just playing around. Hell, you could get Bill Monroe for $250 in a beer joint here in Dayton, Ohio.
Do that right. Back in the mid-50s, huh?
Hell yeah. Me Osmond's had a number 10 record out in the nation, and once more is number 10 in the nation, and we was working in a beer joint down here in Dayton for $15 a piece night and playing Wheeling for 11 a piece on Saturday night.
Oh, my gosh.
I'd went to some other kind of fucking music if I know this bluegrass had been like that.
Yeah.
I'd have gotten something I could make money at, you know.
Yeah.
I guess people's doing all right now with a festival thing, you know, but they ain't everybody doing all right because there'll always be three or four bluegrass bands can make a living in it, and the rest of these sons of bitches is carrying it, you know. They bringing a crowd in, making no money, you know.
Yeah.
And going around, and it seems like to me that these fellas, you know, for prestige, you gotta get him a bus or something like that. You know, I never believed shit like that, you know. I just wanted to pick my music and go ahead and just travel and do my thing, you know. I never believed putting on a big front, you know, or trying to be somebody you're not.
Well, do you consider that having a bus as putting on a front? Isn't that just a matter of convenience and safety?
Well, it's a matter of convenience and safety. But you let Bill Monroe get a bus, and everybody, every other bluegrass band that's playing on the road, they have to have a bus too.
I see.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because it's just because he's got one, you know. And I never give a shit what the next man's got. I got what I wanted, you know, or what I could afford.
Yeah.
And if Bill Monroe goes down here and jumps off a cliff, half these bluegrass mantle players will do the same damn thing. And I never took and look up to people like that myself.
Yeah. Well, I got a couple of the real quick questions. Did you have a sound that your band was, that you wanted your band to sound like when you were?
Yeah, the best sound I ever had in my life, the best sound was Porter Church and David Grisman.
Huh.
And the best sound that closest got to what I wanted, Porter Church and David Grisman, and Jerry McCurry was playing the bass with me, and and that's at the county record that David Grisman produced.
He uh-huh.
produced when he first come to work with me.
Okay.
And who was playing the bass of Dobro? Jerry McCurry's playing bass. Craig Winfield from Richmond, Virginia was playing Dobro.
Craig Winfield?
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that name.
Craig Winfield is an old-time good Dobro player.
Oh.
Craig Winfield.
Okay.
That was the best sound I ever had in bluegrass.
That's what you were looking for, huh?
That's what I was looking for. That's what I got. Was, you know.
Huh.
It was a driving, clean picking, hard, high singing.
Well, that was a good... That was your idea of the best band. However, you know, a lot of the band members we know are really tough taskmasters, and the subsequent musicians have to sound exactly like the records, and they have to conform to a certain sound that man like Jimmy Martin or Bill Monroe has in their mind. Did you have that? Did you restrict people like that?
I hired good people. I hired people could pick, and I give them a free hand as long as they didn't, pick exactly like somebody else. David played jazz on the mandolin when he played with me.
Is that right?
He played notes, jazz notes.
Huh.
I hired good musicians, like Bill Keith told me one time. Bill said the stuff that I had, you know, when he's working with me, you know, he said, see Bill Keith when he was playing that chromatic banjo?
Yes, sir.
I turned Bill loose and let him play what he wanted to. And I sung and picked that guitar hard and sung that fast driving stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he picked that stuff, and it was and him and Grisman both, you know.
Was that after Monroe? I don't recall.
Before Monroe. No, everything's before Monroe.
Before Monroe.
That was before Monroe.
Huh. So he was picking that style even before he was with Bill Monroe, huh?
Well, sure. He didn't invent that style. People think he invented that style of Bill Monroe?
His chromatic banjo.
He was picking that stuff when he come to work with me in Washington, D.C. He come to Tom Morgan's house.
Hmm.
And Pete Cackendall had just give me notice he was leaving. He had too much of his work was overriding, you know. And he come to Tom Morgan's house, and I lived over in Virginia, and Tom called me and said, there's a banjo picker over here I want you to listen to. And I said, well, we need a banjo picker, so I come over and listen to him. And he was picking the chromatic stuff just like that when he come and work with me, I guess 6 months or a year or something like that, whatever, you know, and then they went to deal.
Huh.
That, you didn't have that down?
No, sir, I didn't.
Well, see, everybody tells everything fucking different, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you like it is, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I'm the first known bluegrass band that Bill Keith ever played with.
Hmm. Well, I'm going to see...
Me and Frank Wakefield, Bill Keith, and Tom Morgan. Tom Morgan played the bass.